Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 26th, 2017. This is episode 1416. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and gets delivered to your door ready to display right out of the box. Visit fractureme.com/podcast for 10% off your first order and select the Tech Guy so Fracture knows where you heard about him. And by Felix Gray. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Felix Gray glasses filter blue light and reduce eye strain without the ugly yellow tint distortion of other computer glasses. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/techguy to try a pair today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality. I always am kind of casting around in my mind, what else can I add? artificial intelligence, computer speech synthesis. It's not that, though. It's assistants you talk to. What is that? What is that category? Voice services? Yeah, I don't know if that means anything. You know, Echo and Siri and Cortana and Google Assistant. 8888 Ask Leo. Anything with a chip in it, anything that's changing this world of ours thanks to technology, that's stuff we could talk about. 888, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's a toll-free number, as all the 888, all the 888 numbers are, and that's from U.S. or Canada. But if you're outside that area, and I know we have listeners all over the world thanks to the internet and the vast appetite for technology information and news, you can always reach us if you use a voice-over-the-internet tool that will let you call phones, like Skype, for instance. I guess we can now call phones with our Google Home. That's kind of cool. Have you made a phone call yet to anybody? If you have a, I don't think that many people have the Google Home. That's their version of the Amazon Echo. But you can now, if you turn it on, I think you have to go into the Home app and turn it on. You can now just say, okay, you know who. Okay, person in the thing. Call Leo. And if I'm in your address book, I guess it just makes the call. It's pretty cool. Cool. This is a very kind of simple application of machine learning and artificial intelligence. Machine learning means they throw a lot of data at a specially designed computer program that can take all that data and start making inferences from the data. Google does this all the time. You know, one of the reasons they offer Google Photos for free. You know, free unlimited storage of all your photos, that's pretty awesome. But what they're using it for, and I don't think this is nefarious, I mean, they're clear about this, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, is to train machine learning with a lot of images. And you get the benefit because you can go to your Google Photos collection and type in search phrases, and you don't need to categorize photos anymore. You know, we used to spend a lot of time putting them in folders. Here's my trip to the Grand Canyon. Here's a picture of Joey in front of the Grand Canyon. You know, you'd spend a lot of time tagging them and captioning them and foldering them. Now you don't have to anymore. You can search for Grand Canyon pictures in your total pile of pictures. I put every digital picture I've ever taken that I still have a copy of anyway, is in my Google Photos. Something like 30 or 40,000 pictures. And now you type Grand Canyon and all your Grand Canyon pictures will show up. For the most part, you know, it's accurate. I mean, occasionally you'll get a small rift instead of the Grand Canyon, but it's pretty good. You can even say Grand Canyon with Joey and it'll do that. They'll say, oh yeah, here's a picture of Joey in the Grand Canyon. Whoa, that's pretty impressive. Grand Canyon, you could just say, well, yeah, because it was doing that. Yeah, oh my goodness. I just tried it on mine. I thought I had some pictures of Grand Canyon, and all I got was a picture on the wall. I took a picture of a picture on the wall of a guy standing in front of the Grand Canyon and still recognized it. I thought I had more Grand Canyon pictures than that. But that's pretty impressive. But okay, so location, no big deal. Your phone's telling it where it is. But what if you type in pictures of dogs? Say, I want to see a dog pictures. It'll find all your dog pictures. Now, in mine, there are some goats, and there's one seal, and a couple of cats. But still, that's called machine learning. They threw a lot of pictures of dogs at the machine, at this special program in the machine, and it started to learn. And eventually did a pretty good job of knowing what a dog looks like. And I can see why it would confuse a goat, because a goat kind of be hard to distinguish from a dog from a computer's point of view. I think humans are pretty good at telling the difference. But not, I mean, humans can tell a goat from a dog. This is the thing. A computer, so this is then artificial intelligence, right? Where a computer is acting as if it were intelligent. And this is where the problem lies because, well, humans, like a human baby probably knows the difference between a goat and a dog, certainly knows the difference between its mom and somebody else. Computer may not be so good at that. It's getting better, though, as more and more machine learning gets poured into these devices. I bring this up because there's an interesting story today in the news about Australia. You know, one of the things one of the things that plagues the beaches of Australia is sharks. And you have shark spotters on Australian beaches, but now they're putting drones equipped with a shark detection system out there powered by, yeah, same thing, machine learning, artificial intelligence. And they say that while people have a 20 to 30% accuracy rate when looking at aerial images to find sharks, the drones are about 90% accurate. They say, well, they say, now we're not going to replace humans yet. But they're going to eventually, don't you think? So they're using aerial videos of sharks from publicly available sources, just like Google's doing with its dogs, to train the system's algorithms, differentiate sharks from other marine creatures, and of course surfers and swimmers and boats. It can tell the difference between a shark and a dolphin and a whale, and it can say, there's a shark, that's a shark, that's a shark. Humans are not as good at that. So we're seeing this. While I would be quick to say that no one should worry about the machines taking over, well, that's a long way off, we are making progress with machine learning and artificial intelligence. And that's kind of what your Echo is doing. When you ask your Echo to do something, it's make a phone call. It has to first understand what you said, make sense of it in its little machine way, and then act on it. That's not easy. Of course, what we're all looking for in the long run, maybe not, I shouldn't say all, what I'm looking for, and maybe a few others, is not virtual reality glasses or speech interfaces or mice or keyboards. I want to plug in directly. You may say, that is science fiction, Leo. That's not going to happen. Well, maybe it is, but Elon Musk has created a company called Neuralink, designed to connect your brain directly to a computer, which would be great for, you know, virtual reality and, you know, all sorts of things. For instance, you could say, I'm not so good at recognizing sharks, but I have software in my, you know, that I can use in my brain that will help me. That's a shark, Leo. Oh, okay. Now you might say, well, that's Elon Musk lives in a science fiction fantasy world. We're all going to Mars, he says. Yeah, except that he raised $27 million from venture capitalists, so much so that even though they had said originally we'll take $100 million, Elon has now said we're not looking for any more investors. It was supposed to be secret, but the Wall Street Journal told everybody. $27 million, 12 investors, 6 unaccredited investors, people who are not. Yeah, that's a new thing. The law, the Jobs Act, says that it used to be that you had to have, you know, you had to show some smarts. You had to have a certain amount of net assets before you could invest in stuff like this. And that's not fair. So Congress passed the Jobs Act, and among other things, it allows you to, any idiot, to spend his money in any way possible. I don't know if this is a dumb thing to do. It's probably a smart investment if he can turn it around in your lifetime. Neuralink, a brain-machine interface, and they've raised $27 million to work on it. And probably a lot more coming. Here come the machines. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm a human, still. Not augmented in any way, but I can try to help. I'm augmented. Actually, I am augmented. I have my fine chat room and all of you listeners. There's very few questions that the totality, the total sum of us can't answer. So give us a ring. Let us help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Because one of the ways somebody says, why do people like Elon Musk, who are billionaires, need investors? Because that's one of the ways you stay a billionaire. You spread out the risk. Boy, I have to apologize to really write stuff. I buy every time I buy a new camera, I go out and I go to Really Write Stuff, which is a great photography supply place, and I get this bottom bracket. Actually, I have the bottom and the side bracket to put on it because then I have a tripod mount. This is a standard rails. These rails on it are standard. And I have a tripod mount. I just snap it in. So it's really handy. But I got this one and I ran out the door because I was going down to the podcast convention without reading the manual. I am an idiot. And so I had owned many of these. And so I thought, oh, well, wait a minute. And I couldn't open the battery door. I said, oh, they designed it. I can't open the battery door. And then I said, and now I have to unscrew this. And they don't, but they have a mounting place for the, but they do for the little wrench. It's in a different spot. I hadn't found it. So here's the little wrench. But even better, they say, and I have to figure out how to do this. They've designed this so you can move the battery hatch. So I have to apologize to them because I said, don't buy this. I'm returning it. This is terrible. You ever done that? Oh, I feel so dumb. I hate it when I... That's just dumb. Oops, that's the wrong thing. Screw. This is why I'm not a billionaire. I need an investor group. Except there's no return on investing in my photography. There's nothing for anybody to gain from it. Lisa bought me this. But it's good because it reminds me that we all make mistakes, you know, and product reviews and stuff. The thing that I really admire, Really Write Stuff, responded. They posted the review. They didn't have to. And they responded in a very measured way. So I somehow have to remove this. I have to figure that out. I guess this just comes off. And put it, install it. It's not near the glasses on the back. And it's kind of permanently stored there. I first found out about this from a photographer friend of mine who's a National Geographic photographer. He does everything from Really Right Stuff. These guys are really great. They do good stuff. Anyway, I'll have to figure it out. I guess I'll give them a public apology because I was so mean. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. In the studio with me today, the lovely and talented Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful.
Awesome.
What do we do now? Oh, I answer calls, don't I?
What are we doing here?
Yeah, what are we doing? Why am I here? Who am I? I'm having an Admiral Stansfield moment. What should I? I think you've been answering the phones for a while here.
A little bit. A little tiny bit.
8888-ASK-LEO, and the calls are pouring in, and you have prepared several people for their appearance on the air here.
Yeah, Bob sounds like he's going on a trip of a lifetime.
Oh, man.
And his wife wants to blog it and has a couple questions.
Oh, what a good idea.
How to do that.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Bob in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
In January, we're taking a world cruise for 6 months.
Oh, man.
Oh, and we've done it before, but anyway.
You've done it before.
We would like to be able to write a daily blog for friends and followers that we have. We tried a blog a couple of years ago during a similar trip, but it was difficult to load photos onto the blog.
Yeah.
My question is, do you have a recommendation for a no-cost blog or a one-time cost blog that we could use for the trip?
So, yeah, this is an interesting issue, and you're going to have the same issue. What cruise line are you going on?
We're going on Regent.
I love Regent. But are you going on the new one?
We are going on the new one, yeah.
So they may have better internet. The last time I was on a Regent, the internet, and this is true on most cruise ships, is very slow. But newer technologies are emerging. For instance, I was on the Anthem of the Seas last year, which is a much newer boat from Royal Caribbean. And they have what they call Voom internet. Yeah. And it's so fast. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it's almost like you're at home. You would have no trouble blogging and loading images. However, when you're at sea on most current cruise ships, it's so slow that what I always do is I upload them overnight. I just let them sit there and percolate. And you can get that done. Here's what my suggestion would be. There are many free blogging platforms, but probably the best known is Google's Blogger at Blogspot. And one of the reasons I would recommend that is because what you could do is take your pictures and upload them overnight slowly to Google Photos. If you have a smartphone, for instance, are the pictures on a smartphone or a standalone camera?
They're on a standalone camera, but they're also on a laptop.
Okay. And you can do it on the laptop. The new Google app to sync photos, they've actually kind of blended them all together, but that will do it in the background. My workflow generally is I take pictures on a fancy camera, but then most cameras, Sony, Canon, Olympus, Nikon, have a smartphone app that will suck those pictures into the smartphone.
Okay.
And then I let the smartphone stay on overnight uploading to Google Photos. I have Google Photos on my smartphone. By morning, most of those pictures are up there, unless you have hundreds.
You can eat 50 on an everyday basis, but only want to download on the blog, perhaps maybe three or four.
Yeah, so you could pick the few that you want and delete the rest from your camera phone. Let the camera phone upload to Google Photos. Then in the morning, it's a simple process to go to your Blogspot, because it's a Google product also, and just say, pick this photo, this photo, and this photo. They'll already be uploaded.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I do. And my wife, by the way, is very good at this. She makes a habit of, at the end of the day, checking, going through all her photos, picking the ones she wants and blogging them. And
Available for hire.
I know. I want to hire her, but she won't do it for me either. So I make sure I'm in her pictures, and that way I don't have to worry about it. But that's the process that seems to work quite well. So you at the end of the day, you go through your pictures. If you put them on your phone or even your laptop, you can upload those on the slower internet. And it's good to do that overnight, because people go to bed and then it gets faster. You're sharing on most cruise ships 1 megabit or two among, you know, a few hundred people on those Regent cruises, about 500 or 600 people. But at 3 a.m, no one's using it. So those photos will get uploaded overnight. So I upload overnight and then in the morning make the blog. Blogger's very good. That's free. WordPress.com, which is one of our sponsors, has a free tier as well. I really like them. The reason I think Blogger might be a good choice is just because of their tight integration to Google Photos makes it very simple.
Okay, great.
Oh, have
By
fun.
The way, I don't think WordPress, I think all of the red WordPress options are all cost. And you're saying there is no free ride here on Bloggers.
Both Blogger and WordPress, I believe, have free tiers. But maybe they changed those. So check. Blogspot.com for Blogger and WordPress.com for WordPress. Who else has free tiers? There are a lot of, you know, free hosting companies out there, but those are the two of the best, I would say.
Great. Thanks very much.
Hey, have a great trip.
Okay.
Do you know yet what your travel blog, or maybe you just want to keep it to the friends?
Our travel blog. We don't have a.
You don't have one yet.
Called the one we used before is called Twyland Bob's Around the World Cruise.
I love it.
Very very creative, right?
It's a great idea though. If you're going to be gone for 6 months, that's a great way to stay in touch without having to, you know, call or write everybody.
There used to be,
I went to China maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and you couldn't blog from China.
Right.
And I used a service that has gone down since called Posterous that was a really great idea. You blogged by email. And so everybody can send out email, and China's not going to block your email. So both WordPress.com and Blogspot will offer you, if you look in the settings, usually it's buried deep, an email address you can email to.
And that would be another way you could write your blog post, put the pictures in it, and then email it. And, you know, again, running your email program overnight to send it out. And that's a way to kind of avoid having to load a big page and everything. You just do everything locally and send it off via email.
Great suggestion.
Have a great time.
Those, and we'll start looking up the options.
Bob and Twyla, Taking on the World Part 2. Are you going to do a different part of the world this time? Or?
Yeah, this is there's an emphasis on Africa this time and a lot of time in the South Pacific.
When I retire, I really want to do that. That sounds like so much fun. Have a great time.
You can't be tech guy. You need to be old guy to do this.
Well, I'm waiting for fast internet, because once they do get these faster internet connections on boats, I could do the show from there.
Hey, there you go.
What do you think? I'm talking to you off the coast of Madagascar.
Remember to keep your teeth clean.
That would be awesome. Hey, have a great time. Bob and Twyla's trip around the world. Blogging is, it's funny because it went through, you know, in the early 2000s, it was the flavor of the month, you know, or year. It was very, everybody was thinking, oh, this is going to change the world, blah, blah, blah. And then it just kind of fell off. Podcasting's been kind of like that. As a podcaster, I've watched this happen. I just came back from the Podcast Expo. It's called Podcast Movement. It's a big conference in Anaheim and next year in Philadelphia. And I have to say, it's still alive, as is blogging. We're still here. And they're really great ways to do some self-expression. Maybe do a podcast about your trip around the world, too. As long as you can record audio. And as long as you're not in a hurry to upload it, maybe do it from a coffee shop when you land. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up right after this. Postgres got replaced, in effect, when it went out of business by another company, or by its original founders who took it over. I'm trying to remember the name of that. Does anybody remember that? Posthaven, that's it. So Posthaven took over. Now, it's not free, and that's how they say we're not going to have the problem Posterous had, because you're going to pay. But it had all the features. It was the guys who founded Posterous and then sold it to Twitter. Said, we're going to create this again, anew, and this will be $5 a month forever, which I don't think is a huge amount of money, but that guarantees that they won't go down. So I moved all my Posterous blogs, and I had many of them, over to Posthaven. And that might be another one to look at, Posthaven. If you don't mind spending $5 a month, the key on Posterous was you'd post by email, and then it would automatically send it out, if you wished, to Facebook and Twitter as well. That magic music means it's time once again for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. He's the host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast on our podcast network, twit.tv/HTG. And he's also editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well.
Good.
You said you wanted to talk about Apple. What are they up to?
Well, I only started to say that we're about to see another big disruption in the TV industry. I mean, we already have seen quite a bit of disruption from broadcast and three networks, and that was about it, to cable with hundreds of channels, to now internet being a provider of content from networks and so on, to now the big tech companies themselves, which we're already starting to see, but we're about to see a lot more, actually creating their own programming. Apple announced this week that they are about to start creating their own programming. They're going to budget $1 billion for a year of programming. And they poached a couple of very high-level programming executives from, I think it was
Sony,
Sony maybe. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So they are going into original programming, as is Facebook, which we sort of knew, but already they're they're starting to really talk seriously about it. And YouTube, which has now started a live TV streaming service, but now they're getting in much deeper into their own original content as well.
It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, the
really
world
is
changing. I think part of this was because Netflix was losing the ability to do movies. Because the movie industry was saying, oh, yeah, we're not going to give you our first-run movies on streaming. We'll only let you use it on DVD. Their DVD business and their streaming business split, and they wanted to have some reason for you to subscribe to the streaming. Netflix said, okay, so Apple says $1 billion. Netflix said, we're spending $7 billion this year. $7 billion.
On original programming.
Yeah. Now, original for Netflix can mean a couple of things. Some they make themselves, like House of Cards, and then some they buy from the BBC and other places that you can't see enough in the U.S. Nevertheless, right. I think Netflix now is bigger than HBO in terms of subscribers. There's a lot of people paying $7, $8, $9, $10 a month. It depends on what you're getting for Netflix. And it's a very profitable business. They can, obviously it is. They can afford to spend $7 billion. Apple's a different business because Apple doesn't really care about so much about streaming TV. They just want you to subscribe to Apple Music, I think.
Right. Or some future new service called Apple TV or something like that.
They keep trying to do that, but nobody wants to play with Apple. They're afraid of what happened with iTunes. iTunes dominated the music industry, and they said, not again.
Yeah.
We're going to see.
So they say, we'll just make our own. No, we don't need your content. Yeah. We'll make our own.
We'll see. The next 3 or 4 weeks, I think the latest rumor is September, I think, what was it?
Next month, we're 14th. Supposed to hear some big announcement. Actually, that big announcement's another really cool thing I'm looking forward to, which is the next generation of the Apple TV set-top box.
Yeah, we're pretty sure they'll go 4K now.
And HDR.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Exactly.
Ah,
yeah.
Interesting. That would be cool.
High dynamic range. Yeah, it would be.
As I've mentioned before, the Apple TV is the last non-4K device attached to my 4K TV.
Isn't that amazing?
They kind of
super forward-looking company is the last to the party in this case.
Well, they've always said Apple TV is just a hobby. So, yeah, and I just spent hobby money on my Apple TV, right?
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see. I mean, we're really seeing a serious breakup of the whole TV paradigm. I mean, Disney a couple weeks ago announced they're leaving Netflix to start their own streaming service.
Yeah, that bugs me. I hope we don't see that. We've seen that in radio. Remember, in the early days of internet radio, you could get any station on your internet radio that had an internet stream. But then CBS started it, and our own parent company, iHeartMedia, both created their own apps.
Yep.
And so now you have to have multiple apps on your phone if you want to listen to not that that's a big deal. They're all free.
It's not a big deal yet. Well, yeah, but in TV case, they're not all
free.
They
won't be free, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so if you have to subscribe to the Disney streaming channel and Netflix and Apple and so on, then you're starting to talk some serious money.
Dale Poco in our chat room is saying something kind of interesting. He's saying Apple's going to have a problem because they don't clearly they want to be a family-friendly business. And HBO with Game of Thrones, Netflix with a few of its series can get pretty adult.
No kidding.
And I think that may be one of the reasons they do so well. I mean, adults, grown-ups want to – I'm not saying adult programming. I'm saying grown-ups want shows for grown-ups. And if Apple's unwilling to do anything that would have – you know, wouldn't be completely family-friendly, that might limit what they're capable of.
Well, that may be. A lot of these companies in the articles I've been reading have said that they're looking for the young demographic, not the
– right.
Well, I guess even down into the late teens to 30-something.
Yeah, you know why? Because those people don't watch TV.
Right.
And so advertisers would love to get a hold of the youngsters, the youngins.
Yep, the youngins,
because if you get them young, if you get them buying Tide and drinking Pepsi when they're young – you'll get them for
lifelong.
Life.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So, this is all fascinating to watch this happen.
It really is.
In one way, it seems like it's happening fast, but in the other, it's slow motion. We've been talking for a decade, you and I, about convergence, the idea that Hollywood and Silicon Valley would kind of mush together and that we'd see a lot of technology in programming, you know,
yeah,
and the way you get it. And it's taken a long time for that to happen.
It has, but I think it's an exponential ramp up. I think, you know, it took a long time to start to and they were thinking about how to do it, and now I think we're going to be on the upswing. It's going to start happening faster.
Do you now? So this is the other question we've always talked about: the best quality for UHD and even HD content is on the on the Blu-ray discs.
That's right.
But more and more of our content is going to be streamed. That's what this
and
is all about.
Be,
is that bad?
That's right. Well, it's going to be highly compressed. It has to be.
Okay.
Much more compressed but than a Blu-ray or even over the air, as you have said and I have said many times, the best broadcast quality is really over the air.
Yeah.
But you only get your local channels in that case.
Yeah.
So then the next lowest down in the tier is satellite or cable, and that's, you know, not perfect, but it's okay. And then we have streaming, which they have to really compress that signal a lot in order to be able to get it to more homes. As you know, in the U.S., you know, bandwidth is not as high per capita as it is in many other places in the world. So they really have to crunch it down, and that's going to affect the quality big time.
Yeah.
Well, it's, and that's not going to change anytime soon unless we all have 100 megabit coming into our home.
So people should still get that UHD Blu-ray player.
I think so.
And if you've got a nice TV anyway, UHD 4K TV. And and the movies you like the best, I guess you buy them. You don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I can rent, you know, 4K UHD and buy them too on Vudu and other services, but you're saying that's not going to ever be as good.
Not ever.
Yeah, because they're not going to force you to have a 100 megabit connection. Just, I mean, that wouldn't be much of a business. Oh, you can only use this if we're 100, if you got a super high speed. Well, all right. I guess I'll keep my Blu-ray player. I do have one. I got it with the Xbox.
Oh, good. So, yeah, that's the way to do it. All right.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com, but don't forget his podcast because, well, it's on my network. twit.tv/HTG, the Home Theater Geeks podcast. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk again next week.
You betcha.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls. More of your calls right after this. More of your calls. We'll talk to more of ya. Hey, just before we get on with it, I do want to show you something. My fractures came, and I am so happy about this. Fracture. I know many of you are photographers, and you're looking for ways to print your images that's different, that's unique. I love, and Lisa loves, Fracture. We have Fracture all over the house now. It's a photo decor company. It prints your photos onto glass, and there's something about it. They added a laser cut rigid backing, so they're, you know, you don't need to get them framed. They're ready to go right out of the box. In fact, they include the wall anchor and the hardware and everything. And I love it. Oh, yeah, let's show this one. Lisa's just bringing in her. This is one of my favorite images that Lisa took on our last trip. So it's printed on glass. It has the backing. And it just brings photos to life. What size is this, Lisa? I can't remember. Is this medium or large? This is medium because we have bigger sizes.
Yeah, there's bigger.
They have, in fact, let me show you. I have other ones. I have the box. They come. I don't know how they do this. They pack them, even though it's glass, perfectly. So there's no issues. How many did we buy? We bought a ton of them. this is the largest size. This is the one I put my favorite picture of the trip on. I love this. I am so in love with the image quality. They do a great job of printing it, and it comes alive. Each fracture is handmade. They do it in Gainesville, Florida, U.S. sources. In fact, in some cases, they use recycled glass, right? It is fantastic. And even if you're just taking a picture from your camera phone, in fact, one of them here is from my camera phone. I'll show you. It's a great – the one of Machu Picchu is from my camera phone. Here, we have a lot of these. This is my favorite picture of my kids I ever took. I love that. Here's another one. Black and white looks so good on this. I just love it. Do you have the Machu Picchu picture there? Not this one. Oh, maybe I took it home. Yeah, there's one of me. That's Lisa took that. This is a camera phone picture. They're beautiful, beautiful. So if you want to find out more, go to fractureme.com/podcast. Select the tech guy so they know you heard on the tech guy show. And they have a 60-day happiness guarantee. So if for any reason, this is not just what you love. You get your money back. They're 10% off the first order if you go to fractureme.com/podcast and then select Tech Guy. There's something that happens when you print on glass that it just pops the contrast and the saturation. I can show you a close-up of this one because it's not as big as some of the other ones. And it just looks gorgeous on the wall. Look at the sky. This looks so much better than a print. What a great way. Here's one I love. I feel like this is old-timey. This is Henrietta's high school graduation. So they do a great job with black and white, which is, by the way, a challenging thing to print. They really do a great job with this. FractureMe.com/podcast. Here's another one. I did a little bit of a sepia tone on that one. So it looks, I just love these. Great way to print your photos. So if you're a photographer and you've got pictures you like, we'll have to find that it was of Machu Picchu. I took it with my Pixel. And it's an amazing picture. And Fracture just did such a good job of printing it. You can start, they have small. I think we have all the sizes here. Here's this. There's a 4.8 by 6.4 up to the largest. And if you have a photo you really love like this one, 21.6 by 28.8. It's huge. That you could put that over your mantle. And if you want to resize or recrop or make it grayscale or change the border, you can do that in the advanced editor. And a little pro tip, this was shot on my 5D Mark II, Mark IV, and so the aspect ratio is 3:2. They normally print 4:3, but what you just do is you go in the advanced editor, you undo the cropping that they automate. They make it easy for people with camera phones, but if you're doing it with a DSLR, just go in the advanced editor, undo the cropping. You can resize, crop it your way. What we did is we added a black border on it, and I think it makes it look even better. I really love it. FractureMe.com/podcast. But please, if you will, select the Tech Guy so that it helps support the show so Fracture knows about it. And I have to tell you, if you've got an image that you just love, you know, make that special image just pop. This is a great gift. By the way, it's on the backing it comes with. I'm going to pull it off of that. That's just the way they package it is so great. So it really protects the integrity. FractureMe.com/podcast. Use the Tech Guy offer code. Yeah, I think I might give this to one of the kids. They should have this.
So, hey, everybody. Happy to see you here. We had a lovely vacation in which we did almost nothing. You know, a lot of people go on vacation and they try to cram in as much stuff. Oh, let's go here. Let's go here. Let's go do this. Let's do that. My wife and I, we lead such busy lives as it is that when we go on vacation, we don't want to do anything. So we don't, except for go to the spa, get massages, go out to nice dinners. But otherwise, you know, we're lazing around, we're reading. And especially, the reason that we took our vacation in Palm Springs, and it was a lovely 105 degrees during the day. And we do that. We've done that for many years. And the reason we do is because it forces us to slow down. You can't go outside and do a bunch of stuff in 105 or 110 or 115 degrees. We were lucky that the temperature was only 105 peak during the day. But that's fine. You stay inside. You go to the spa. You go to the gym. So we had a wonderful time, very relaxing. So let me see if I can answer. Oh, it's only 20 seconds left.
You can do it if you want to stick around for the top of the hour.
Yeah, happy to.
All right. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Kent on the line from Irvine, California. Hi, Kent.
How you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you today?
So I finally decided to upgrade some stuff. I got rid of a TV flat screen from 2006. I'm having a hard time of trying to future-proof that. And then I had a receiver that I've had for probably 18 years with one HDMI output that I used per sound and had no subwoofer.
I decided
to start with that and went and bought a sound bar.
You're now involved in what we call the upgrade cascade.
Yes, yes.
You start with one thing, and pretty soon you replaced everything.
Yes, and trying to get it all to work together, I guess, is the issue, or which way you go. Because I got the sound bar, and I plugged it into another TV that I had that has an optical outlet, but it doesn't have HDMI ARC. So I used the next best one, which they said was the optical unit. But it doesn't work with my Roku stick or my Chromecast. It only works on the TV part of it.
Right. ARC is the problem here. It stands for audio return channel or something like that. And the idea is if the TV makes sound, you want your soundbar to a soundbar should pick everything up coming out of the TV over the optical. So you're saying the Chromecast and the Roku stick, both of which go into the TV via an HDMI port, and the audio would be coming from the TV on that.
Correct.
So I would think the audio return channel wouldn't be necessary, but maybe it is for that.
It just goes silent.
Scott is still here. Do you have any ideas, Scott? Would it be an issue of a setting in the TV that would say send all the audio to the optical out?
Boy, that's a good question. I'm a little surprised at this. What brand of TV is it?
It's a Samsung.
All right.
Okay. So
good TV.
Yeah, I mean, but it's older, but it's, like I said, it still has
it's older.
Yeah, that's older.
So that's what the audio return channel is for, is when the TV's making sound. It's typically for smart TVs, right, that are getting their own content.
It.
Right.
Yep.
Then I don't need the stick or the Chromecast if I have a smart TV.
Right. Right.
Well, because it's an older TV, it's maybe I'm not as surprised because, you know, in the olden days, they...
they didn't know of this stuff.
They didn't know of this stuff. So, yeah, they have an optical out, but it's probably only for the TV's internal tuner.
I think you're right.
If you're using the TV's internal tuner with an antenna... to get over the air cable stuff, then yeah, it'll come out the optical out.
Makes sense, yeah.
But with this newfangled HDMI stuff, Chromecast and Roku stick, which are great, but the old TV doesn't know what to do with it.
Right. But I would still dig down as best you can in the menus and
see. It may be. This TV does have HDMI inputs, right? I mean, that's what you're connecting the Roku and the Chromecast to.
Yes. Yes, it just doesn't have the HDMI ARC. That's the only one it's missing. And then it has, like you said, the optical, and then it has component. You know, it's got everything but the ARC.
Yeah, ARC only really comes with smart TVs because that's
correct.
Yeah, they're not
correct.
I would bet you. First of all, make sure that the optical output.
Go into the sound menu or the audio menu.
Yeah, and make sure it's sending out something that, in all cases, that the soundbar can understand.
There might or might not be a setting for that in that menu in a TV that old, but I would absolutely agree. Go look.
Yeah, it does, and it blocks pretty much everything out. There's only one option. It's to turn the TV speakers on or off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's...
If you have the TV speakers on, can you hear? I bet you can hear the.
Oh, that's a good question.
The Roku and the Chromecast, right?
I can when I turn the TV speakers on, yeah. And then when I switch back to the over-the-air antenna, then all of a sudden I have to turn the volume up, and then all of a sudden the soundbar turns on, and then it's super loud, I got to turn it back down.
Oh, man.
So, again, upgrade cascade. It's time for a new TV, a new AV receiver, a new...
Afraid so. Afraid so.
Only if you want all this to work.
But then they have so many options on TVs now, it's ridiculous.
You don't really... I wouldn't say you need a new TV. What you really need to do is replace the receiver. Get an AV receiver. Yeah. And instead of plugging the Chromecast and the Roku into the TV, you plug them into the receiver. You want a receiver with multiple in channels. And you plug
multiple HDMI inputs.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm sorry. Multiple HDMI inputs. And then that way you can put everything that you've every source you've got into the receiver. The receiver will handle the audio.
Right.
Well, that seems like the way it was before. I just didn't have a lot of HDMI inputs.
Exactly.
Instead of the sound.
And by the way, receivers are a much cheaper thing to upgrade than a TV.
Oh, seriously. Yeah. You can get a good receiver for $300-$400. I think $500 is a really good receiver.
Yeah,
right.
Denon makes some very good $300 AV receivers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Sorry to make you spend more money. Thank you for sticking around, Scott. I appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
Our Marshall McLuhan moment, I like to call it. Jonathan, Pittsburgh, PA. Hi, Jonathan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, first of all, happy 10th anniversary. I used to follow you on the Tech TV days, but then I first called you 10 years ago when you were on KFI.
It's our 10th anniversary.
Our 10th anniversary, that's what I mean. And it's our, mine and yours, the one that counts. And I love your twit.tv network. And
thank you.
You've educated and entertained me for so long, and you've helped me help so many other friends and family.
Yeah.
So thank you.
So kind.
I love photography, but I hate the menu structures, which I think were designed by M.C. Escher, but I'm not sure. But what I would love to have is a camera with all the normal dials and buttons, but also a dedicated button that I could press down and say, set ISO to 800. Or turn
wouldn't that be cool?
And as an example, in another world, I like sometimes to watch closed captions on my TV, but never used to do it because I didn't want to deal with the menus. Now I have a Comcast voice remote. I can just say, turn on closed captions, and it's there.
We see this in smartphones. There are a lot of smartphones, Samsung smartphones, for instance, that you can set it so that when you say the word cheese or smile, it takes a picture. But remember, a smartphone has a lot more computing power than a typical camera. They're getting close. And I think that that's really, to my knowledge, there's nothing like this. There was for a while a point-and-shoot camera that was basically an Android device, and that might have had voice in it, but it wasn't a great camera. So I think I hope somebody from Nikon or Sony or Canon or all three of them are listening, because I think you just said something brilliant. And I would be willing to bet in the next year or so you're going to start seeing this. People are licensing Amazon's voice services, Echo, in cars and refrigerators. I haven't seen one licensed for a camera yet, but that is huge. And since that's how we're going to expect to interact with our devices in the future, I think it's inevitable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't think there's anything yet. That's the problem. Let me see if Samsung still makes that silly Galaxy camera.
If I could press the button and say,
I agree,
set to sports scene or, you know, something like that. Wow.
Yeah. I think that's inevitable. You know, they have Nikon, for instance, on its high-end cameras, has a memo function, whereas you're taking a picture, you could say this was at the 30-yard line and this was a fifth and, fourth down and conversion up or whatever. Photographers love that. This camera had jelly bean on it. I think it's probably,
I feel like it's any minute now.
I completely agree with you. I think it is any minute now. And to my knowledge, nobody does this, but let me keep looking. Somebody's going to license Amazon Voice Services and put it on a camera for sure. For sure. Brilliant idea.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Well, thank you, Leo.
All right.
Thank you so much.
10 years, baby.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Scott Wilkinson, didn't mean to horn in on your time.
No, that's quite all right.
Got 458 and counting.
Thank you very much. CO Bra, I don't know how you would say. It's so funny about screen names. You never quite know how to say them sometimes. Wanting to know about the new Xbox One X, does it have Dolby Vision or just HDR10? I don't know. That's a good question. I'll have to look that up if they even say. I would suspect, my gut is telling me, just HDR10. Because Dolby Vision requires a certain kind of, it requires a software developer's kit, an SDK, and you have to do it certain ways and so on and so forth. So there aren't very many. LG just this week released their UP970 Ultra HD Blu-ray player with Dolby Vision. Limited, with Dolby Vision for discs, not for streaming. It has streaming apps in it, like most players and TVs do these days, and it does not have Dolby Vision for streaming yet. That's going to be another firmware update coming later. But it does do it for Dolby Vision discs, of which there are currently 5, 6, something like that. We'll see a couple more in next month. We'll see more and more. I'm not trying to cast aspersions here, but it's a trickle right now. And whether or not it will become a flood is we will see. I hope it does, because I really like Dolby Vision. I prefer it to HDR10, but there aren't very many discs that do it now, and there are three streaming services that provide it in the U.S. anyway, one of which is global, Netflix. There's one in China and one someplace else. I can't remember now. But in any event, Dolby Vision is rolling out a little slowly. Part of the reason, I'm sure, is that it's a proprietary system and it requires a licensing fee from Dolby, whereas HDR10 is free to use. And it's required on UHD Blu-ray discs, and Dolby Vision is optional. So that is the answer to that question, as far as I know. Beatmaster said, when we were talking about AV receivers, Leo and I both mentioned Denon, and he said, well, don't forget Marantz. Oh, yeah, well, that's the same company. The Marantz receivers are great, but they're very similar to, and they look kind of different, but they're functionally very similar to the Denons because they're both made by the same company. Airshow Voice had asked about, what about the Pioneer VSX 530? Just got one for our vacation home, and I like it. Good. How would you compare it to 10-year-old Onkyo 7.1, which he has in his primary residence? Well, the VSX 530 is 5.1, not 7.1. But it's going to have a lot more of the modern features, like Bluetooth, streaming audio, and networkability, that sort of thing, that the 10-year-old Onkyo doesn't have. So if those kinds of features and functionality are important, then it's going to be better. But it is only 5.1. And if you already have a 7.1 speaker system, then I would get a 7.1 AVR for the primary residence. I would update it. 10-year-old receiver, you could definitely see some improvement if you get a new receiver, but I would get a 7.1 model, not a 5.1, if you already have those speakers set up, the 7.1 speaker set up, which I presume you do. Let's see here. Twisted Mister, isn't 7.1 pretty much gone in favor of Atmos? No, the answer is no. And the reason is not that many people have installed Atmos. I mean, quite a few people have, but it's a relatively small percentage of people who have home theaters. More and more, I think, are adopting it. And Dolby has made it pretty easy with the option of either putting speakers on your ceiling or in your ceiling, or firing upwards and reflecting off the ceiling if you have the right kind of ceiling, which most people do have, basically a flat reflective ceiling. It doesn't work very well with cathedral ceilings and that sort of thing, but with a flat ceiling, it works quite well. And so, you know, it's certainly possible to do. I wouldn't say, though, that Dolby Atmos is overtaking 7.1. It isn't. Let's see. Rusty Bones is asking, will future firmware updates also necessitate upgrades in HDMI cables? No. The answer is, generally speaking, no. And the reason is that the only reason you need upgraded HDMI cables is if the bandwidth increases. So if you're trying to pump more data down the line, then you might need new HDMI cables if you have older ones that don't support 18 gigabits per second, which is the current standard. And when HDMI 2.1 comes out, don't hold your breath. We're not going to see it in products for another year at least. But that can go up to 48 gigabits per second. And when you have that kind of increase in data rate, then yes, you might need new cables. But a firmware update is not going to change the bandwidth appreciably. What that requires is new hardware. And that's why we're not going to see HDMI 2.1 anytime soon for another year or so, because the companies that make chips need to build chipsets that have that kind of bandwidth capability. And they don't yet. So that's why we don't see any HDMI 2.1 devices. Even HDMI 2.0 doesn't always necessarily run at 18 gigabits. Sometimes it's 10.2. So only when there's a hardware upgrade will you need to upgrade your cables, possibly. It depends, but that would be the only situation. Beatmaster, yes, we were talking about this on the show. Did you hear that Apple is launching a UHD model of the Apple TV? We'll know for sure next month, in just maybe a couple weeks, when they make some big announcement that everyone's rumored to or is saying, oh, yeah, they're going to announce a 4K UHD Apple TV with HDR, which would be awesome. I'm looking forward to trying it out. Got only about 30 seconds left. Web 3642, what model LG OLED would I purchase at this moment in time? The least expensive one. I would get a B7, which is only available in a couple of places, or a C7, which is more generally available.
Thank you, Scotty. Have a good
My
one.
My pleasure.
Talk
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk tech, computers, and the internet, and home theater, and digital photography, and smartphones, and smartwatches, and you know anything with a chip in it, any kind of technology, the things that are changing our lives for the better and sometimes for the worse. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, at 888-827-5536. One thing I think that is very good, Facebook's safety check feature. So, by the way, our thoughts and prayers go out to all of our friends in Texas, of course, with that horrible Hurricane Harvey, which, thank goodness, seems to have toned down a little bit. But when a disaster like that strikes, an earthquake or hurricane or tornado or tsunami, Facebook has a really nice feature called Safety Check that lets you tell your friends and family there that you're all right. It does sometimes, I think, cause some worry, because if you don't go there and say, I'm all right, your friends and family might assume, oh, they're not all right. And so there's a little risk for that. But I think in general, this is a good thing. You know your friends who are near the landfall of Harvey, and you might want to check on them, and you can do that. Now, I don't... I think Facebook is going to, or plans to, I'd heard, make a tab in your Facebook timeline where you can see this just kind of automatically anytime. But they haven't done that, at least on mine, yet. I think that would be a nice feature. Let me see if they've done it on mobile. Perhaps they have. No. So Safety Check is currently something you have to go look for, or if you're in an affected area, I think it would pop up for you. It's in the Explore section of your news feed, somebody says. Okay, don't know where that is. You know, they've made this really too hard and too complicated. I don't have an Explore section on my news feed. But if I did, I think I do on, do I have that on my smartphone? No. Well, if you don't, yes, it is. Okay, if I go, all right, so you're right, it is in my... on my mobile, if I go all the way to the right on mobile, they have that menu bar. We call it the hamburger menu because it's three lines. It could be, if you had a rich imagination, a bun and a hamburger in the middle, or just, you know, three stacked lines. If you tap that, at least for me, and I look in the Explore section, I'll see Safety Check there. It's maybe a little harder to find on my, I don't see it on my desktop. But I do see on mobile. And that makes more sense on mobile. If you go to Safety Check, you learn more. You can create a safety check. You can see how people are in your, you know, your friends are if they're in the Harvey area or some other area with something going on. I think it's a good idea, but I also have mixed feelings about it because, as I said, it could cause worry. And I've heard it causing worry when none should happen. it's one of those things that Facebook just assumes, well, everybody's using Facebook, so this makes sense. But if you don't use Facebook, you can't be on safety check. It's useless. So anyway, something to be aware of. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's get back to the phones. And on line one, John in Irvine, he says he might have a solution for the streaming not working on the soundbar. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great.
If I understood the question correctly, he's got auxiliary audio that he's trying to control with his TV remotes, and he's tried the optical plug and various other plugs, and it doesn't work. If that is the question, I had the exact same issue recently, and I just got an adapter from RCA Cable to single pin the micro plugged that plugs into the headphone jack of the TV.
Oh, what a good idea. Yeah, older TVs have headphone jacks. I forgot.
The newer ones do, too, most of them.
No, I'm sorry to say, all the new TVs have dropped the headphone jack.
I just bought two new TCL TVs.
Yeah, you're lucky. Good.
They both have headphone jacks.
Good, because that's something that's disappearing from TVs, just like I guess it's disappearing from phones. I don't know why it's disappearing from TVs. There's plenty of space. But yes, of course, an older TV for sure will have a headphone jack, and that gives you another source of audio that you could plug into that soundbar.
Yep, and then you've got the headphone jack stereo, too. So you've got
perfect
channels.
So, great tip. Already. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, John. Yeah, I'm glad your TCL's had it, but I'm hearing from people who buy new TVs, the 2017 models, without headphone jacks, which surprises me. But I guess even a 10-cent part, if they take it out, it improves their profit margin. 8888 Ask Leo. See, we can help each other too. Doesn't have to always be a question; could also be an answer. Dale in Santa Monica is next. Hi, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, I was prompted by the fellow that called that said he had trouble with the menus and cameras.
Yeah, he wanted a voice solution.
You're the one that got me going on Fujifilm with the X100.
Oh, love that camera.
I've been totally into Fuji. I'm up to the X-T2 now.
Good man. Fantastic. People are raving about that camera.
Oh, it's once you use it, it's great. But the thing is, most adjustments can be made from without going into the menus.
How do you do that?
It's got dials and buttons.
Oh, buttons,
and it's got a quick button on it that pulls up, I think, about 12 different settings that you can change without going into the menus.
Yeah, I love that. In fact, that's something that I'm pleased to see, but these are in higher-end cameras. More and more, for a while, they were getting everything's just on the menu, on the electronics, and I found that very frustrating. And still a lot of point-and-shoots are that way because it saves them money. But when you get to a camera like the X-T2, my Sonys are the same way. They're starting to put physical dials for the features
right.
Photographers use the most.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense because a photographer doesn't want to pull the camera away from his face or her face and look down in a menu and go through menus. They'd like to just, turn a knob. And you're saying the Fuji goes a step farther by allowing you to program knobs to the functions you particularly use the most.
Right. Yeah, you can do that. Yep.
I like that. Yeah, I use my Sony has 4 or 5 custom buttons, as does my high-end Canon, and I do that all the time. I'll reassign those buttons. I don't...
But I think this is throughout Fujifilm's line.
Good. Well, these are great. Fujifilm is making some excellent cameras these days. This is an APS-C sensor. Fabulous.
You know what they did? They said before I bought one, I looked this up, and Fujifilm eliminated the anti-aliasing filter.
Oh, interesting.
So theoretically, your picture is much better than the APS sensor normally gives.
That's right. So that's a feature some of the high-end cameras are starting to offer, too. The problem, of course, is if you eliminate that filter, you can get moiré-ing, a weird effect on very fine lines.
Yeah, but so, what Fujifilm did was rearrange the pixels on their sensor so that doesn't happen.
Nice.
I don't know how that works, but I mean, that's what
nice.
It's supposed to be.
Well, moiré is not a huge problem. I think getting rid of that extra high-band filter really helps in terms of the clarity of the image. So a lot of, for instance, the Nikon D810, you could get it with or without the filter, depending on what you cared the most about.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, we're making such progress at this point. If you're really getting a modern a camera, especially if you get an interchangeable lens camera like this Fuji, you're getting such sophisticated technology. And that's why I think voice can't be too far off. That's a natural. Yeah, that's
you're probably
natural.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it that what's happening, especially, and Fuji might have been one of the companies that really started this. Fuji and Olympus. They almost look old fashioned because of the knobs and dials. They look like the old kind of, and I love that. They really have a nice retro feel to them.
Yeah, they do.
Beautiful
they do.
Camera. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, Dale.
I have one more request.
Well, hang on the line because I have one request from our advertisers to take a break.
Okay.
But if you'll hang on, Dale, I will get back to you right after this word from our sponsors. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love this. They're doing a silver edition of the Fuji X-T2. That's really a pretty camera.
Sure.
So that's good for you. You've stuck with the Fujis, and are their lenses? It's only Fuji lenses, or are they?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I have only Fuji lenses.
Yeah, I think that's generally the way to go.
Funny thing, I was using this this zoom lens, and I saw somebody that had the exact same camera, which is really rare. And she said she just loved the prime. So I bought a couple of primes. And,
It's
so fast, I can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody should have at least one good 50-millimeter prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really, that's they call it the nifty 50. It's the lens.
In fact, I got... The 35, which is the equivalent of the 50 because of the smaller center.
Right.
And I also got like a 18 that's like a pancake.
Ooh, nice.
I carry a little, my camera case is a small hip pack.
That's awesome. That's one advantage of these. When I got a bigger camera case because my lenses have gotten out of control.
Yeah, well, I've got a Canon 5D. Mark II.
Oh, you know then. You know all about
it. Like, I just didn't want to carry it anymore.
I know. I gave John my 5D Mark II. He's carrying those big lenses around with him. It's crazy. I know.
It's a fantastic camera, but
I know.
I don't want to do it.
I know. We were talking to Scott Bourne, my friend, the photographer, whose doctor said he's had so many shoulder surgeries. He said, you can't carry a heavy camera anymore. You have to give up on your 5D. And he went out and got an Olympus. OMD EM1 Mark II, and he is getting he's a bird photographer, wildlife photographer.
Oh, wow.
He's getting stunning shots that I wouldn't have thought possible on a Micro Four Thirds. So that's because technology is making such advances. Hold on just a second, Dale. I'll be right back. This camera is about you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Dale on the line from Santa Monica. He's a photographer. And you said you had one more thing.
Yeah, you had mentioned I'm using Time Machine. I would like to switch using Time Machine and Super Duper.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that, and I don't know the process. Could you describe that, and I'll...
I don't know what the process is either. Super Duper says works with Time Machine, but I don't know how it does because I've never used Time Machine. I don't like Time Machine. So I wouldn't worry about it. You can you're Time Machining to an external drive, I presume.
Right.
So I would just put aside I'm telling you to spend more money, but I would put aside that drive or keep it and have a second drive for Super Duper. I think what Super Duper says is this is from a great program for making a boot drive. And if you were going to do that, that's always up to date. So you'd attach an external drive to your computer. You'd have Super Duper run on a schedule. The first time you run it, it would erase the drive. So if that's your Time Machine drive, bye-bye Time Machine. It would erase the drive and make a complete backup of your current drive and then keep it up to date. And it's a bootable backup if you choose so. That means it's perfect for an iMac or a laptop where if the hard drive in the iMac dies, that whole thing is useless. So you can reboot from the external drive, and it's exactly, because it's been kept up to date, exactly the same as the internal. So now Scooter X uses both, but they don't. Do they coexist, Scooter X, or just they're separate drives? My sense is they're probably separate drives. Or you take part of this, if you have a giant drive big enough to support Time Machine, take part of the Time Machine drive for Super Duper, something like that.
Okay, I could probably do that. I set it up as a RAID 1.
Oh, nice. So it's big.
Yeah, it's like, I thought I was going to put movies on there too, so I've got two 4-terabyte drives.
Nice. I bet you somewhere on the Super Duper site, it's shirt-pocket.com. I bet you somewhere they say right on the front page, it's a perfect complement to Time Machine.
Right.
Implying that you can use them together.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's separate drives. See, the problem with time, but they do different things, in effect. Time Machine means you can go back in time and use earlier versions of a document. That's the most useful thing about Time Machine. But Super Duper keeps a single copy of everything, the most recent copy, but it's a bootable recovery disk. So I think that's probably what they mean.
Okay.
Is use both with two different drives, right?
Okay, well, I'll look it up on their site.
Scooter X says, he uses two separate drives. He makes a clone with Super Duper. And then keeps Time Machine, because Time Machine you want to have running all the time as you change documents and so forth.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Dale. Yeah, you might say people spend too much time thinking about their backup. I would say they don't spend enough. That's such an important thing. And the nice thing is once you've got it set in a way that you feel confident is going to work, you can kind of forget it. So I do think that it's not that would not be a bad way to do it, is to have two drives. One running Time Machine, which means you can always go back in time to an earlier version of a document. One running Super Duper, which means you have a perfect exact clone of your hard drive this instant that you can boot to. And then you just add that third piece, which everybody should have, which is the off-site backup, the backup that's not local, you know, so that if a hurricane comes along and destroys your house, that you have your data still. And, you know, people don't want to think about this, but that's what backup is. It's planning for disaster, which is never fun. But what is that old trite saying? Those who fail to plan to fail. Terry in Long Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Terry.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Leo, I'm a retired IBMer, and I'm the type of person that wears a belt and suspenders.
I love it.
I follow your advice to have three backups, one on-site, one off-site, and one in the cloud.
Right.
And I use Carbonite for the cloud, and I have the basic plan. And the basic plan says that it does not support automatic video backup. And I found that I can go into my movies section. I'm on Apple, of course, and I can select movies MPGs and MOV files, and click on back this up, and it'll back it up.
Right.
Does that mean that from now on, Carbonite's going to keep that up to date in the cloud, or do I have to come back periodically and manually, say, back it up again?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a great question. Yeah, you can manually, if you pay for a higher level plan, the Personal Plus or the Personal Prime, you can have automatic backup of video files. You just make sure that the folder those video files are selected. Manually backing, and I'll tell you why they do this. I mean, it might look at first like, oh, they're trying to chintz out on the backup plan, but it isn't really that. It's these files tend to be so big that they take a long time on an online backup to back up. And so, if you have automatic backup on a terabyte of files, you're going to be using your bandwidth almost all the time backing up, because it's going to take forever to back those up. So I think they do that more because they don't want to. Frankly, storage is pretty cheap nowadays. That's not the issue. They just think that most people don't care about backing up videos. They're usually backups themselves of a DVD or something, and they don't want to continually back those up. So it would be my guess, and I'm not sure. You should ask Carbonite, but my guess is you can manually back them up. But it's not going to continually back them up, only because that would be just taking a lot of bandwidth all the time. So, yes, you'd have to manually back it up. But you don't change those very often, right?
No, I don't. The main thing is I wanted to get a single backup and in the cloud. And these files, most of them are music videos, and they're about an hour and a half each, so they're almost 4 gigabytes.
Yeah, you don't want to back up 4 gigabytes. That's the problem, because it just takes forever.
I've got pretty fast bandwidth.
Well,
I have 100 megabits.
It's not the 100 megabits down. It's how much up?
No, it's upload, 100 megabits.
Oh, wow, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unusual, obviously.
Most
people say, you know, I got 20 megabits, and really what it is 21 or 22, 20 down, 20 and 1 or 2 up. And on that, in a bandwidth like that, you really don't want to start backing up gigabytes of files. But generally, if it's not something you created, I would say don't back it up. I would say if it's music videos that you're saving, put them on a hard drive, bring them to work. Do the offsite backup that way. However, you can, if you buy the Carbonite, you know, one step up, it's not very expensive, the Carbonite Personal Plus plan, it will automatically back those up. It's just that most people in the United States think they have a lot of download speed, and they do, but they don't have a lot of upload speed. And remember, if you saturate your upload, your download's going to disappear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, I want to talk about a sponsor of the show, a brand new one we haven't talked about before. But one I think a lot of you are going to be very interested in. Its name is Felix Gray. It's a website, felixgrayglasses.com/tech guy. And I know a lot of you, like me, are sitting and looking at screens all day. And your eyes get tired, right? Well, there are a couple of reasons why your eyes get tired. You know that eye rub moment where you go, oh, God, they're dry, they're tired. There are a couple of reasons. Of course, it's the blue light coming from the screen. It's the glare coming from the screen, and there's a way to solve that, and that's with these computer glasses from Felix Gray. You can also get them as readers, so some magnification. In fact, I would suggest getting a little magnification in general. It's nice to have a little magnification and make that screen easier to read. I tell you what, you put these on, and you feel like, wow, that's like a refresh on my eyes. Felix Gray does something a little special. The blue light filtering is actually in the lenses. They're not a coating for the lenses. There's no ugly tint. You know, they don't look yellow like you've seen those blue blocker glasses. They look clear. They look like regular eyeglasses, and there's no color distortion. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/tech guy. You can find out more about why you want to filter out blue light. Plus, they're good. They're made nice. They're premium crafted lenses. This is one of Lisa's. This is going to be too small for my head, but it's a really looks great on her. Actually, I really like these tortoise shells. And let me show you, because I ordered a pair, and I'll show you. Let's do the unboxing. Non-prescription and reading lenses are currently available. They're going to do prescription glasses. They absolutely are. They've told us that's on their roadmap. These are my Felix Grays. I just ordered them. They come in a beautiful box. Really nice. Reading prescriptions from +1 to +2.5. Or what I would suggest is adding, even if you don't use readers, about a quarter of a diopter plus 0.25 magnification. That really helps for me anyway. I always find myself kind of peering at the screens, and the magnification helps. See these beautiful cases? Oh, these are my new Felix. Oh, those are nice. And it comes with a cloth. Let me try on my new Felix Grays. All orders include free shipping and, of course, free return. Oh, nice. I like them. These are actually nicer than my eyeglasses. Free shipping and free returns. There's no risk in trying them out. Give your eyes the break they deserve. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/tech guy. Learn more about blue blocking, how they do it that's better than others. It's built right into the lenses, so you can't even tell I've got blue filters on here. Try a pair of Felix Gray computer glasses and discover a better way. A smarter way to work and eliminate that eye rub moment. Felix Gray, Gray, glasses.com/tech guy. I'm not taking these off. They're mine now, baby. Felix Gray glasses.com/tech guy. What do you think? I kind of like these. I gotta put it. These are good too. I like these. I don't know. Which do you like? This one? I might steal Lisa's. Felix Gray glasses.com/tech guy. Number one or number two? I like these. They're very comfortable. Really, the screens are so much easier to read, too, I have to say. I don't want to take them off. He's been everywhere. That's why we have him on the air. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. Johnny joins us each and every week to talk about travel. He's one of the top 10 travel influencers in the world, according to, is it Forbes?
It was Forbes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's pretty good. You see his stuff at johnnyjett.com, on the Twitter at johnnyjett, and on Instagram too. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
It's always a pleasure to see you.
Nice to see you too. I decided to wear my Charlotte Speedway. I was in Charlotte yesterday. I got back. I rode a NASCAR. First time I got into a NASCAR, 165 miles an hour. There's a NASCAR experience that anyone can do.
Well, you don't, but wait a minute. You don't drive, do you?
You don't drive. There is one that you can drive. It costs more money. The one I did cost $99. It starts at, and you're just a passenger. You go around three laps of the Charlotte Speedway, and it was two laps too many because you're going 165 miles an hour. And I'm like, all I could think about is I just want to see my son again.
Please, Lord, don't let me die.
These guys are nuts.
Does it feel fast to you when you're in that car?
It feels way faster than being on a plane.
You can see the ground.
And I knew it was the problem. Once you have to go in through the window, first of all. You have to wear a helmet and neck brace. It's 120 degrees in the car. I don't know how these race cars drivers do it.
It's very tough. People who drive race cars are a different breed, that's for sure.
And I'm not into NASCAR at all. I've been to a couple races. My buddy was friends with one of the top drivers. And I have respect for these guys. And now after doing this, I don't know how they do it. 200 miles an hour, and they're bumper to bumper.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But anyone can do the NASCAR experience. It's pretty cool, and they do it all around the country. Wow. So check that out.
Wow.
If you're into fast cars.
So, Mr. J.
Yes.
Every week he joins us to talk about traveling better through technology.
Yes.
And with a website and an app. So,
yeah. Okay.
Give us a website.
I'm going to do this like a food segment for this one.
Okay.
So Andrew Zimmern, the big guy on the Travel Channel, he recommends people not go to Yelp. You know, a lot of people go to Yelp.
Okay.
He hates Yelp. He says.
Okay. You know what? It's so funny because yesterday I was talking with some people about Yelp and saying, I think Google does this because they're worried about antitrust issues. But when you search for a restaurant, the Yelp thing is right up in the top. And I don't trust Yelp for restaurant reviews. I don't trust it.
Well, that's what Andrew says too. If you're looking for quality,
yeah. Now I use Zagat, but they kind of went by the wayside. I trusted Zagat.
Well, he sold out.
Yeah, but although Google owns them, and I think some of that data is coming back. What do you use to figure out if it's a good restaurant?
So Andrew Zimmern recommends that you follow the top chefs in that area that you're going to, or just follow celebrity chefs on Facebook and Instagram and see where they vacation. And when they vacation, they always post the restaurants they go to. Then you go to those restaurants.
Ah, that's brilliant.
That they're good, which is brilliant.
Like if you want a good breakfast, you go where the truck drivers go. But if you want a great dinner, you go where the chefs go.
Correct.
Oh, so brilliant. Now, who do we follow? How do we know who to follow?
Well, you know who the top chefs are. So Tom Colicchio.
Does anybody have a Twitter
list? Jose Andreas.
Like the best chefs?
I will make one, actually.
Would you do that?
After I get off this show, because I have a bunch of Twitter lists.
I wonder if Zimmer does that. Yeah, that's what you need. So Twitter lists are perfect for this. If you go to twitter.com/JohnnyJett, you have to – Twitter's kind of hidden these lists, but the lists exist. And Johnny has like lists of airlines, travel gurus, all sorts of stuff. You can either follow that or keep that link. And whenever you need it, you go there and you can see all the top chefs and what they're doing.
Correct. But I don't know how often they're on Twitter. A lot of them, I think, do it on Instagram or Facebook.
Ah.
But okay. So you have to follow them there as well.
Okay.
You know, everyone tries to put out different information on all their different social networks. Yeah. That way you follow them onto each.
Yeah.
So well, it's a good idea
to follow. Instagram, you get pictures, which is nice.
Right.
Yeah.
And while we're speaking about following social networks, you should always follow airlines or hotels or cruise companies or car rentals, whoever you're looking trying to get a deal from, because sometimes they just put out their deals first on Twitter. And they like, for example, JetBlue, they do JetBlue Cheaps. They have their own Twitter handle for putting out special deals, usually on Tuesday. And they'll put out, say, hey, $29 fares across the country. But they only have like 30 tickets. So you got to find it fast and you got to jump on it.
Oh, look, somebody has just posted in the chat room a link to an article on jobshadow.com, the 100 top chefs to follow on Twitter. Number one, Andrew Zimmern.
There we go.
Bobby Flay, Kat Cora, Guy Fieri, Emeril Lagasse, yep. Jamie Oliver, Chris Cosentino. This is good. See, I don't know all these people. I know a few of them.
Oh, Curtis Stone, he's Australian.
Gordon Ramsay.
All the girls love him.
Mario Batali. I've
done Q&As with most of these people.
Really? I didn't know you were a foodie.
I'm not really, but I have a section called Travel Style, and where I interview top travelers, especially celebrity chefs or even celebrities. Alan Alda did my Q&A 2 weeks ago.
I love it. Give him my regards. He once wrote me a fan letter. Tell him.
Oh, really? That's
tell
awesome.
Him Leo.
I didn't get to meet him. It was just over email through their publicist.
Yeah. So. But that's pretty cool. I think that part of travel is finding a good restaurant. Maybe for once during your trip, eat at a great restaurant where you're going. Is a great experience. But sometimes you also want to find a restaurant that is not so well known that might be typical food. Or like if you go to New Orleans, you could go. It's obvious what the big places are. But finding that little hole in the wall to get the perfect po' boy, that's another matter.
And that's what a lot of these people do. They don't just always eat at fancy restaurants.
Chefs
but one
know.
Trick.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. And one trick for eating at fancy restaurants when you travel is try and go during restaurant week because they offer really good deals then, or eat lunch there because the prices are a lot cheaper.
I agree.
And you have a big meal there at lunch.
And then you sleep.
So always,
I have become a believer in a big lunch, not a big dinner.
Yeah.
I think it's
same
healthier.
With my mom's side of the family was Danish, and that was my grandfather's model.
It's all about lunch.
Yeah. So I got an app for you as well, which since we're talking about food, it's called Chef's Feed.
Chef's
Feed. So this one is kind of like what we just talked about. It's Android and iOS. It's 50 locations around North America, including Toronto, Vancouver.
I like this.
And Montreal. And it tells you where, the good places to go, where the chefs go. So this is two different ways you can find out where the chefs
eat. App.
This is an app.
And they're recommending, Massimo recommends Soul Bar at Solage, which is up in Calistoga. And I've eaten there many times. It is indeed a wonderful restaurant. So I can vouch for this.
Okay, good.
Chefs, because it's in our neighborhood, chefsfeed.com. Yeah, the locals know where the good stuff is.
Especially the local chefs.
Right.
So it's not just, everyone has a different, palate and different
Robert
price points
Bigelow
and things like that.
Says the best food in Louisiana is in somebody's house. But if you want a po' boy, he says, go to Parkway or Markey's. Next time I'm in New Orleans, I would eat my way through New Orleans. That's a great place to eat.
Yeah. And when you travel, by the way, there are tours. There's progressive tours that you can go on. One of the best tours I ever did was in the Cook Islands where you go and you have an appetizer at one person's home. You have a dinner at another person's home.
Idea.
And then you have a dessert at another. So you get to see how people live.
Yes.
You get to try their home cooking. You get to see their gardens, and you can find these tours all around the world.
I've never been to Cuba, but I'm told that you shouldn't bother with a restaurant in Cuba. That many private homes for basically are restaurants. They'll invite you into your home, and it'll just be you, and you'll have a lovely meal. And I'm told that's the way to eat in Cuba. I've never been, but that's my plan.
I've heard the same thing,
Johnny Jet. You make me want to get in a plane and go somewhere. JohnnyJet.com. I guess that's the plan. He's a travel guru, and there's a couple of tips. He tweets them at Johnny Jet, so you can always follow him. He's got – boy, that is the richest Twitter feed. That's better than a delicious meal at a five-star restaurant, that Twitter
feed. I don't know about that.
At Johnny Jet. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls. Let's talk tech when we come back. 2:15. Always a pleasure, Johnny.
Do that. I'm going to see you at 2:15.
Yes, we're going to do some pre-records. Thank you. Or one.
Okay,
anyway.
Good. Actually, I had one more app that I was going to mention, but I'll save it for
save
the
it.
Next one.
No, don't waste apps.
Yeah. They're hard to come by.
All right. Yeah. Right.
All right. Take
All
care.
Right, Johnny. Take care.
See ya.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number back to the show, back to the calls. Al in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Al.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Pretty good. I enjoy your program. I started picking you up back in the days of screensavers.
Oh, my. You go way back.
Yes, sir. Got a quick question.
Yes, sir.
I have a LG V20, and I need a second phone. And I'm trying to figure out whether I want to go with another LG V20 or
Do you like the V20?
Yeah, so far.
So LG is releasing a V30.
Well,
and people are very excited about some of the features that it's not out yet, that we're hearing about them. Now, the V20 has that extra screen. Do you use that?
No. I'll tell you what's a deal breaker when I can't replace my battery or my...
I'm with you on that. So you'd be hard-pressed to find a phone that you could replace the battery on. The new Samsung Galaxy Note? Nope. In fact, I don't know of any modern flagship phones that have replaceable batteries. I'm kind of with you on that one. I used to love the Note. All the way up through the Note 4, Samsung had a back you just pry off, and I would always buy two batteries or three.
Yeah.
And that way you keep the extras in your pocket, and you don't have to worry about battery life because you just put a new one in and you're all good to go. But as the drive for thinner phones has really taken off, all the companies have stopped doing that. In order to get a phone thinner, one of the biggest ways to do that is to take the wrapper off the battery. You know, if you're going to have a removable battery, you have to protect it and protect the people holding it, more importantly, and you got to wrap it. And that takes space. So these thinner phones, the battery is exposed inside the phone. But that's okay because users can't access it. Makes a phone thinner, but it doesn't make it more replaceable. So I think that's too bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I have a Note 4 that died on it. I'm wondering if it's worth repairing or just buying it.
That might be an interesting option. I mean, I don't think the Note 5 and now the Note 8 were hugely better. They're better because they have the curved screen, and the Note 8 has a giant screen, I mean, compared to your Note 4. Plus, remember, the Notes were getting fatter and fatter. They were kind of hard to hold. What they've done is they've made these phones taller, like 21:9. I can't remember the exact aspect ratio, but all of the new phones will be like this. They'll be tall, so they have more screen real estate, but they're not wide, so you can hold them in one hand. Let me see here. Somebody's just put a link up in the chat room. Thank you, Zephyr, for the phones that still have removable batteries. And the V20 is one of the few. That's probably the most recent one that does. That has that weird kind of cartridge system. So you can replace the battery and do other things with that.
Yeah.
G5. Yeah. Looks like LG's the last one. V10. LG's the last one to do removable batteries. Yeah. Holy cow.
I have the V20, which I like, and I have a dead Note 4. So it's a question of getting the Note 4 repaired or buying another V20.
Well, I don't know what repairability on Note 4 is. These phones are pretty much not repairable. How is it dead? In what way is it dead?
It just doesn't start up at all anymore.
And you tried the different battery?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not the battery itself. It's the charging system. You know, I would go to XDA Developers, xda-developers.com, and look up your Note 4. There may be a way to put it into a recovery mode and put some newer firmware on it.
You know, I took it to the repair shop, and most of the repair shops don't want to get to it.
No.
Into intermediate maintenance.
No, they don't want to do it. But it may not be a hardware issue. If it's a hardware issue, well, you're out of luck. But if it's just the firmware got clobbered, that would kind of maybe give it the same appearance as being bricked, and you could maybe unbrick it by forcing it into recovery mode. You'd have to hook it up to a PC to do that, and putting that would have also have the advantage you could put a more modern version of Android on it, which is the chief problem with an older Android phone is not the hardware, but that you're not as secure because you're using older Android, which had all sorts of flaws in it. You know, I think you might have to just kind of give up on this removable battery thing. I wish we didn't, but LG's the last man standing here, and they're probably not going to keep doing it. And, you know, what most people do now, if they want this capability, is they bring around a portable battery and just plug in the phone. I have to say, I'm hearing very good things about battery life on some of the newer phones, the Essential phone. And I think we'll hear once the Note 8 comes out. They announced the Note 8 this week, but it'll be coming out September 15th. Even though it's a smaller battery than the Note 7, that was part of the problem with the Note 7. They tried to stuff too much battery into too small a case. But I think that they're doing some good things to get battery life longer. And, of course, the newest version of Android Oreo Cookie, Android O, which they announced this week also on Monday during the right after the eclipse, Oreo has big improvements in battery life as well. So these things are being solved in software as much as they are in hardware. If the reason you want a removable battery is to give you more battery life during the day, I think you probably get around that. If it's because, well, there are lots of other good reasons. You want to have multiple batteries. You don't want to have to throw the phone out when the battery goes bad, which all batteries do over a year after a year or two. Then that makes a lot of sense. I can't really blame these companies. I think some of it is we're looking for thinner profiles. I think that's a lot of it. That's what consumers are demanding. Gregory in Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gregory.
Hi, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm well. You're going to go travel the world in your RV, huh?
Yeah, we've had one in the past, and now I'm officially retired, and we're looking to get ourselves a smaller unit, and I do a I'm president of a Macintosh group here in Orange County that we're now doing online web meeting to try to save some bucks.
What a great idea! That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's still in the starter age. I got about 30-40 people. It's free to anybody who wants to join.
What's the address? The web address.
Well, that's the problem right now. Is I'm working on getting a permanent one. So they give us. I'm doing it through Zoom.
Okay.
Meeting.
Okay.
And so you can go to the club's website, which is OACC, Orange Apple Computer Club, .org.
Nice.
And there's a place that says it's free, talks a little bit about the club. The site needs to be updated. I haven't even changed the dates on it. I noticed that for the next meeting.
Oh, don't worry about it. That's awesome, though. I love that idea because I think a lot of people would go to user group meetings if they didn't have to get in the car.
Well, that's what it was happening for us. It was reaching the point. I mean, at one time, this club 20 years ago had like 400 members. Now we got about 70, 80, of which about 50 show up on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And
yet we still need user groups. I really believe that.
I do. And, you know, the good thing about it is in the good old days, we had Allison Sheridan happens to be a friend of mine.
Nozilla Cast. Hey, hold on a sec. I got to take a break. Sure. We'll get back to you right after news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, devices you talk to and they listen. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere outside, inside the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me. Don't worry. All you have to do is use Skype or something like that to call. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website, I forgot to mention it all show long, I apologize, is techguylabs.com. And I'll tell you why you want to follow techguylabs.com and bookmark it. Every time I mention something or talk about something, there's a link there. All the things I talk about are there. There's no entry fee, no sign up or anything like that. It's there all the time. So it's the easiest way if you're listening to the show. You don't have to take notes. You don't have to say, what did he just say? You just go to techguylabs.com and it's all there. And we even put audio of the show and video of the show afterwards. Video too. You can see my face made for radio at techguylabs.com. Let's go on. Oh, no, we were talking before the break. We were talking to Gregory in Anaheim, and I end up bogging him down with questions about the Orange County Users Group, Macintosh Group.
That's correct.
Yeah. But now you had a question. You said you're an RVer, you're retiring, you're about to drive around the country. This is my dream, too. I love this idea.
But I'd like to have the option, because occasionally it's going to be, I may have to do one of our web episodes, if you want to call it that, from the RV somewhere where I've got halfway decent Wi-Fi. My wife and I are both Mac users, iPhone, iPad users, and we want to be able to get not only cellular communication as much as possible, but Wi-Fi capability. And a lot of RV parks or places that you pull into have Wi-Fi, but
right. It's shared with all the other people, and they probably don't keep it too up to date. And yeah,
that's true. Plus, you have the problem of trying to get through the thick, metal of the
right.
RV itself.
So some RVers drive around. You've seen them with satellite dishes, not merely for TV, but for internet as well. I don't recommend it. It's a costly system, and you have to re-aim it unless you spend a lot more money and have an automatically aiming system. While that will give you better bandwidth, I don't recommend it. I think the future is clearly with LTE, data provided by the cell companies. And if you pick a cell company that has great coverage in the areas you're going to, or maybe have multiple choices, you can go to Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and they will sell these devices that are designed for exactly what you want. They're not for your phone. They're receivers that receive the bandwidth from the LTE, and then they are a Wi-Fi access point. So typically up to five devices can use it at once.
Okay.
Of course, if you're in an area where they have bad coverage, you're not going to be able to do your
and that's understandable. That's understandable.
But I think of all the choices out there, this is certainly the most affordable and increasingly the best way to do it. In fact, a lot of times your LTE is faster than your home internet. It's pretty darn usable. So I would say that's the way to go. Now, you're going to want to pick carefully to make sure that you pick a company that provides good coverage. You might want to look at Google's Google Fi, because they use T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. So they have three different carriers on one account. And that's kind of an intriguing way to do it. Somebody in the chat room is saying Geeks on Tour does their show from an RV, as the name would tell you.
Yeah, there's quite a few RV podcasters out there. I'm really surprised that do weekly or semi-weekly shows. And they're all in the same boat. They're trying to find a place with decent LTE or Wi-Fi that they can piggyback onto in order to be able to upload their stuff, you know.
Yeah. I wonder what these guys use. I have to say, but just my experience is, there are other solutions, but the least expensive, and probably in almost everywhere you're going, unless you're in the middle of somewhere that's, you know, just absolutely, you know, middle of nowhere, is going to be a 4G LTE connection.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think they're pretty usable.
Well, that gives me a place to start looking. Leo, can I put a plug in for my club real quick?
Yeah.
Well, it got to the point where we weren't taking in enough membership to offset the insurance liability.
Oh, no.
So that just happens. That's just, you know, the reality. Unfortunately, as members have gotten older, they've either moved out of the area or they're not able to do anything. And the internet has made that worse and made that better on both sides. So we came up with the idea of doing this. For $150 a year, I can have up to 100 members as often as I want to do this.
It's a good idea.
And the good thing is people...
Well, that's so... It's not merely because it's more convenient. It also eliminates the whole the insurance hazard.
Completely.
That's brilliant.
And the good thing about it, in the good old days, our club used to be able to get vendors come down and make a presentation.
Right.
But nowadays, money's tight.
Right.
But, you know, I had the folks from Affinity. We did a presentation
Isn't
with them.
Great.
We had the folks from 1Password. They were willing to do a presentation.
Sure, because they don't have to leave their office.
Cost them a little bit of time, that's all. And we're starting to get more and more that are looking into this. Plus, I've now got club members who have moved across the country. I've got participants in Washington and in Oregon and in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, that join us when we have a meeting. So
brilliant.
It's free to anybody who wants to join up. Just go to that website and click there.
Say it again. We put it in the show notes, but we'll do it one more time for people who are just tuning in.
OACC, Orange Apple Computer Club, OACC.org.
Now, I hope while you were on hold, you updated the next meeting information on that page. No, you didn't.
I'm going to do that.
You got a nice little countdown clock that says when the next meeting is, but it's run out of time.
Right. No, I'll fix that in a few minutes.
That's great. What a great idea. So if you're a Macintosh user, you don't have to be in Orange County. Anywhere.
Anywhere that you got internet.
I think most user groups should move to this model. That's actually inspired. That's brilliant. And you're using Zoom for your online meetings for that.
Right. And the cool thing about it is if I've got a member who's got a particular issue that seems important, we can let them take over the screen and they can present and then we can take it back as needed.
Very, very good idea.
That's very cool. It works out very good for us. Like I said, we're still in a starting mode, and unfortunately, you see people that aren't dressed real well. Right now, we're at least requiring them to wear a shirt.
Folks, I know you're at home, but come on.
That's right.
Come on.
We are getting better. So
the other thing I should mention with Google Fi, which is currently my choice for a low cost, it's $10 a gigabyte, no matter how much you use. Which I think is a very fair price. I mean, of course, it's more than your home provider, but it's just a fair price. And because they aggregate three different networks, you're going to get the best results, I think. But they don't make one of those MiFi type data cards. However, you can get a SIM from them and put it in a variety of devices, including a tablet or a phone, and use that as one of those data cards. So we'll put a link to the Google Fi using Project Fi with tablets and other compatible devices. And I see somebody's done it with one of the Verizon devices, the Verizon Jetpack, and that's worked. You just make sure you get a device that will support all the bands that the Google Fi can. It works with an unlocked AT&T MiFi Liberate. So there are a number of other devices that it might work with. That might be a good choice. I did, as a Google Fi subscriber, I ordered an extra SIM and put it in one of my tablets because I want to use that tablet on the road. And it could also, you know, turn on the hotspot. You could also use it as a hotspot.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the help.
Okay. Somebody in the chat room saying technomadia.com is an excellent RV site with good info on internet connectivity. Thank you, Web8813 in our chat room. We've got a great bunch of chatters there at irc.twit.tv. They're kind of my extra brains. They're the smart kids in the back of the class, and they're pretty good at providing additional resources. So if you can't follow them, don't worry, though. We'll put that all, as I said, on our website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, if you have a grandfathered 4G LTE connection with unlimited bandwidth, you're great. And I guess, you know, at 10 bucks a gigabyte, it only makes sense if you're going to use, say, 4 or 5 gigabytes. At that point, it might be better to buy an unlimited plan from Sprint or T-Mobile. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's talk tech, you and me. We are having a fun time. This is like a little user group here. That's kind of always what I thought of this radio show as being a chance for. That's what user groups were in the very earliest days of computers. Companies really didn't give you any help or support. And so computer lovers who were in many cases building their own computers got together in Silicon Valley, in Berkeley, California, in Boston. And the big user groups were born. And there were some amazing ones. Of course, the Homebrew Computer Club is where the Apple was introduced. The Apple One, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs were members. They showed it there. Steve Wozniak sold kits for the first Apple One to the Homebrew Computer Club. And there, in the heyday of user groups, I'm thinking of the Berkeley Macintosh users group, and there was one in Boston too. They would have meetings with hundreds of people, and vendors would kill to go there and show off their stuff. And they were so much fun. I think BMUG was like a third Thursday of the month, and it was just an amazing event to go to. But members of users group aged out. The young people, I guess, just didn't feel the need with modern technology. There's no, you know, Snapchat user group. They have their own user groups. They talk amongst themselves. I don't know. And so they tend to be shrinking. They tend to be aging. And I think they're still very useful. But in a way, that's what we do here. You know, we every weekend, all of us gather together. We've got hundreds of people in the chat room, hundreds of thousands of people listening, and we help each other. It hasn't changed much. Technology's still hard to use. Companies still don't really give you much help. And so that's what we're doing. We get together and we help help each other. On the line now from Coos Bay, Oregon, beautiful area. Roger is on the line. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I just got a new phone on Google Fi, and I ported the number from my old S7 on T-Mobile. But now, how do I get updates on my old phone when I'm using it on Wi-Fi or in the future if I hook up to a new carrier?
That's an interesting question. Who made the old phone?
It's Samsung S7.
S7. I still think you get updates. I know I have some unlocked phones that are carrier-free. They get updates. You're right. I mean, you raise an interesting point. Updates often come from the carrier. So in Android, there's a three-stage process. Google creates the update, then gives it to the manufacturer who modifies it for that phone, who then gives it to the carrier who modifies it for the carrier specifics, and then ultimately the carrier pushes it up. But in many cases, these updates come through Wi-Fi. They don't necessarily come through your cell system. So I would bet you'll still get updates to your S7.
But do you think that T-Mobile is even going to have me in their database?
No, well, they won't come from T-Mobile. They'll come directly from Samsung. That's a really interesting question. I hadn't really thought about that. You know, Apple pushes these updates out because they have the clout to tell a carrier, it doesn't matter what you want. We're not going to check with you. We're going to push out the updates whenever you want, and everybody on iPhone gets one. That's one of the reasons iPhone, to some degree, is more secure, is everybody's up to date on an iPhone. It's a little harder on Android because you have to have kind of cooperative factions. I'm gonna guess that you're going to still get that update, that Samsung's going to push it out, and you'll get it over Wi-Fi. It still has Wi-Fi, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you're still connected to the internet. I think you can still check for updates. But I'd love to, maybe somebody in our vast audience or in the chat room knows, you had an S7 from T-Mobile.
Still have it, yeah.
And you've taken the SIM card out.
Well, I left the SIM card in, but I ported the number, and that disconnected my service.
Yeah, well, the SIM card still signals to T-Mobile that that exists. It's not, you know, it's not being served.
Right.
That's a really interesting question. I've just always assumed that Samsung would continue to push updates out over Wi-Fi. But I'd love to be corrected.
Are they going to push out the T-Mobile update?
Isn't that an interesting question? I think not. You're going to get a generic Samsung update. What you really want is you may not. You probably won't get 7.1.2, and you certainly won't get 8. But what you care about most of all is not that, but the monthly security updates. The most recent update is August 5th. And every month, Google pushes out a security update. And I would hope that Samsung would continue to push that out to you. But maybe not, you know, now that you mention it, maybe not. So let's see if we can find somebody who knows. It is the case that T-Mobile has made some minor but modifications to that. You know, they have to change the APN to match T-Mobile's APN. They have to perhaps change the radio firmware to match their firmware. But the operating system in general is really Samsung's, not T-Mobile's. So I would guess that Samsung can push out updates for you. And the S7 is modern enough. I think they are still supporting that with updates.
Of course.
Is there a way to get...
I was thinking that... Oh, go ahead.
One of the things Google's done, by the way, in response to this, is move as much of it, the operating system as it can, into the Google Play Store. So, for instance, you know, a lot of the Google services libraries, which aren't really apps, are in the Google Play Store and get updated by the store. Those you'll continue to get. Ah, here's a good answer from Phantasm in the chat room. So Samsung does continue to offer an update capability, but they may not do it via over the air. You may have to use Samsung's Keys, K-I-E-S. That's the software they offer for Windows that is a PC connection for your Android phone that you can get updates through. So you may, just like updating the firmware on a camera or a laptop, you may have to proactively go out, run the Keys software, see if there are updates, and then push them to your phone over a USB cable.
Got it.
So that makes sense. And I think it would be worth doing that every month or two. Check to see if there's an update, because you want to get those security updates on Android. It's very, very important. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that might be a question, too, for the XDA developers website, xda-developers.com. If you go into the Samsung S7 section of that, if somebody hasn't asked that question already, and they often, I always read the pinned posts in all the sections, because they often pin the ones that everybody's, oh, everybody wants to know this. And I bet you that's one of those things everybody wants to know. So it'll be right at the top. But if they haven't, you can always ask in there and say, what do you guys do? That's a very interesting puzzle, because you do want to keep these up to date. And there's no reason, just because you don't have cell service, that you can't keep using it as a Wi-Fi-enabled tablet or Android device. That's actually a very good use for it. It's a great thing to give a kid, for instance. If the kid says, I need an iPod. No, you don't. Just take this old S7. You can put your music on it and listen. If you know, 8888-ASK-LEO, or get into our chat room at irc.twit.tv, or there is a section on the website for every show, every hour, every question even, where you can add comments, and that's another thing you can do, is add your comments at techguylabs.com. No sign up to use Tech Guy Labs. It's free and open to the public, but we do ask you to log in via your Twitter, Google, or Facebook account when you leave a comment, just to keep the spammers out. techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. See, my Nexus 6 gets updated. But that's a little bit of a different thing, because that came from Google, right? So that gets updated. All right, no fighting. No. Oh! This is for the Mayweather-McGregor fight. Saturday night's all right for fighting. Yeah. I think Mike Cozio, our musical director, is very excited. You're going to go to a bar? You're going to have people over? What are you going to do for the fight? Nice. So you're going to pay the pay-per-view. Charge them $10 each. A little tip there. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I like it. Saturday night's all right for fighting. Michael Cozio, musical director. I think every song he plays is a message embedded. It's kind of part of the fun for me of doing the show, is trying to figure out, why is he playing this one? What's this one all about? Joe on the line from El Monte, California. Hello, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm calling to thank you for one thing, about telling me an obscure fact about an obscure stock, which caused me to buy that stock, and the stock went way up.
Oh, but dear.
It wasn't because of that fact. It was when you said that Apple, this is years ago, had a program where they could run Windows. So I said, well, that, you know, they're going to put Windows out of business. So I got out of Microsoft. I got into Apple. But, of course, nobody cares about that. You know, it was the gizmos. I had no idea that the gizmos were
who gonna- knew the iPhone, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, first of all, I don't make stock predictions, and I don't buy tech stocks because I want to keep some objectivity in the stuff I talk about. I don't want anybody to think, oh, he's, you know, touting Apple because he owns Apple stock. And to be completely fair, when people have asked me, like my half-brother asked me about his Apple stock. I said, and this was 5 years ago, I said, I'll get rid of it. Apple's not going anywhere. Boy, was I wrong. So no, he didn't.
You didn't remember that Apple could run Windows. That's why.
He didn't. Thank goodness. I feel bad. On the other hand, we had a host, a great guy, Scott Bourne, who I said, if you're going to host our Mac show with me, Mac Break Weekly, you can't have any Apple stock, Scott. So he sold his Apple stock. This was 10 years ago. And he's a very kind guy. Doesn't hold it against me. But he had a lot of stock, and I think lost. He would have been a lot. He's wealthy anyway, so I don't feel too bad. But he would have been a lot wealthier if he had not. But I do believe that journalists should not hold stock in the companies they cover. I don't think that's fair. And I don't. You should know.
Well, I have just one other question. Do you know any other obscure fact about an obscure stock that nobody will care about except me?
Yeah, that's the trick, right? If you want to win in the stock market, it can't be something everybody knows, or it's the fact that nobody pays attention to. Everybody knows and thinks it's not germane. I once had a guy was at an event. We were doing a radio show at a remote, and a guy drove up in a Ferrari. And he came up and he said, you know that you bought me that. I said, what? He said, well, you were talking about something, a company called iOmega that made something called a zip disk. And I bought a lot of iOmega stock when you were talking about it. And it made me quite a bit of money. But friends, I do not give stock tips. If you listen, maybe you'll, as you have done, Joe, is glean a fact that might be of value to you. But I personally think the stock market's kind of a little bit like legalized gambling these days.
Yeah, a lot of it should be even illegalized.
I know. Well, how can you compete against insiders who know, you know, a lot more than you do about what's going to happen with a company? I think it's very difficult, and I think the average investor just doesn't know much.
I knew the wrong thing. It was wrong.
Yeah, but you lucked out.
Right for the wrong reason. Yeah. Usually I'm wrong for the right reason.
Well, I told the guy with the Ferrari, he said, I hope you sold that iOmega stock because it tanked shortly thereafter. But that's the other problem. It's not just knowing when to get in. It's knowing when to get out. Would you sell your Apple stock today?
No, sir.
You're going to hold on.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't want to get into it. Obviously, we could talk for hours about Apple, but I see clouds on the horizon because I think that the product is getting too expensive.
I think there are a number of issues that Apple's going to have to solve. One is they're really a single product company, and it doesn't seem like that. But they really are. The iPhone powers most of the Apple growth. And, you know, in their analyst calls, they've been touting services. Look how our number two revenue is now services, which includes iTunes and iCloud. But if you really look deep into those service numbers, $3 billion of that, a significant, more than half of it, comes from Google paying to be on the iPhone. So it's still iPhone revenue. You take away the iPhone, I feel like Apple's in trouble. And I don't see a lot of innovation coming from them. On the Macintosh side, they've really dropped the ball. We'll see what happens with augmented reality. That we've just heard that they've decided that in their self-driving car effort, they're not only not going to try to make self-driving cars, they're backing way off. They're going to do services for self-driving cars. And that their test vehicle is the Apple Shuttle. That's it. So it's not a big effort. Google has many, many cars out there for testing self-driving software. So but again, you'd be foolish to listen to me. I'm glad it worked for you.
Yeah, I would just say this: when they get up to $1,000 per gizmo,
they will be.
Yeah, they're even saying that this next one's going to be $1,000.
I'm not convinced though that we also have seen evidence that Apple fans, especially iPhone fans, are willing to pay that much.
Well, time will tell.
Time will tell, and it's not going to tell with my dollar. Let me think if I can think of any companies obscure. See, I don't think like an investor, mostly because every time I've said things like "don't buy this stock" or "do," I've been dead wrong, dead wrong. Don't listen to me.
Well, you're probably wrong for the right reasons.
Maybe
right for the wrong reason.
Well, one of the things is that what we do on this show, you know, people often say, "How come you diss Apple? Or look at their number most valuable company in the world." The way I look at a company is not from the point of view of an investor. Or how much money it's making. I mean, people say, well, the iPhone's got to be the best phone in the world. Look how many they've sold. I counter that with, well, that means McDonald's is the best steak in the world because look how many hamburgers they've sold.
That's right.
Sales is not the only way to judge something. And I don't judge something by the Apple Watch, for instance, which I think is kind of a flop, has sold well. But that doesn't mean it is a useful tool. So when you hear me talk about a product, I'm not talking about it from a business point of view ever. I don't know anything about business. I'm talking about it from an enthusiast's point of view, somebody who uses this stuff, and whether you might want to use that stuff. And
so, I mean, just without wanting to take too much more of your time, do you have any opinion as to whether there's a phone, a smartphone better than the Apple that's coming out?
I think the new iPhone is going to be a very significant device. There's not only just a huge installed base, there's a lot of lock-in from Apple. They lock you into the ecosystem. For instance, We just found out that 75% of all teenagers are using iPhones, making Apple's messages platform the number one messaging platform. And there's a reason, because Apple makes messages only for the iPhone, not for Android. And if you're using an Android phone and all your friends are using Apple phones, you're left out. You can't be part of the conversation. So there's huge peer pressure. And it's things like that, not necessarily technological innovation, but things like that that keep Apple's engine rolling on all eight cylinders. I think they're really doing a good job of that. On having said that, so asking the question, what's the best phone, isn't necessarily for an investor going to be the most important question. There absolutely are better phones out there. I think if I were going to look at, if you ask me what a hot technology is, it's voice. And this is where Apple is really far behind. Siri, which was one of the very first voice assistants, Apple didn't put the money into it they needed to, and they didn't make it the best. And it is now, I would say, without doubt, the least valuable voice assistant, even compared to Cortana or Google Assistant, and certainly compared to Amazon's Echo, which dominates the field. So to me, that's the area that is the one to watch. And keep an eye on voice-enabled devices. You heard one of our callers asking about a voice-enabled camera. Oh. You're going to see a lot of those in the next few years. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I gave you my money, I gave you my time, and all I got was this stupid T-shirt. It says the Gizwiz. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz because he brings us a gizmo or a gadget each week, and he is a wizard of these things. He's also you can't say the longest time writer at Mad Magazine, because a lot of Mad Magazine writers have been there forever.
Yeah, exactly. I think I hold the record for the longest writer having something continuously in every issue for more than 50 years.
You haven't missed a single issue in 50 years.
No, even the ones I had to go to newsstands and write in them and on crayon. I got in that issue.
Yeah, I have one of those issues. It says, hi, Leo, madly, Dick DiBartolo, right here. This is one of the autographed Mad magazines that Dick gives away in his What the Heck Is It contest, which is pretty cool. You get the current issue of Mad, and Dick will autograph it for you. But we'll talk about that in a second, because you've got a gadget for us.
Yeah, I have a gadget. You know, when you live in New York City or an apartment, you have little refrigerators. You know, I have my refrigerator makes 4 ice cubes every 3 days. Dennis has one of the under-counter refrigerators, and he's always coming down to borrow my 4 ice cubes. So we decided, let's get a countertop ice maker.
Whoever heard of such a thing?
Yeah, well, so we found one from a company called Roseville, which I now just found out is a brand of a Newegg. It was on Amazon for $109. So, Leah, this is kind of neat. It sits on a counter. It's not hooked up to plumbing. So every couple of hours, actually about every 8 hours, you pour in 32 ounces of water. And it makes 9 ice cubes every 8 minutes.
Oh, that's plenty, unless you're really a heavy drinker.
Yes, exactly. And since it's a little compressor in there, it is your refrigerator for the ice cubes.
Does it make noise? Is it loud? Is it noisy?
It's not loud. It makes a bit of noise when it drops the ice, and then there's Conk. a little tray that comes along and collects the ice and drops them into the little ice bin. But it's in the kitchen, so, you know, you don't hear it. And so when you take enough ice out of it, it automatically starts producing more ice. And it works really well. In 24 hours, it can make 26 pounds of ice.
You must – your kitchen must be more organized than mine. I know I'm running out of counter space. How do you – you live in New York City. Where do you get extra counter space?
Well, actually, what Dennis did was to build shelves over his half refrigerator.
That was a
perfect idea, so that there was a counter.
Now, what shape are these ice cubes? Are they?
Leo, they look like little bullets. There's a hole in the center.
That speeds up the freezing.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't normally take warranties, but they had a 4-year warranty for $14. And now that I see there are this little tray and then the little scooper pushes the ice cubes, I'm figuring, you know, for $350 a year.
It's kind of a Rube Goldberg device. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah. What a good idea, though. This is kind of like the ice maker in your fridge, but it just doesn't have the fridge.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't take up that much space. And those are he likes making the small ice cubes. He has no room in his apartment for the big ice cubes.
It's New York. But you can make bigger ones.
You can make bigger ones if you want.
It's a pretty looking device. Exactly. I guess if you did a lot of drinking, this would be
Yeah, well, he does now because he said, I said, Dennis, are you drinking again? He said, Dick, I have all this ice. I've got to do something.
Oh, so that you can – small or large cubes. It can make – say again, you said eight cubes – how – nine
cubes? It makes 9 cubes every 6 to 8 minutes.
That's a lot of cubes.
It is. In 24 hours, it's 26 pounds of ice.
But you'd have to empty it every hour,
yes, yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But the thing is, you're there. I mean, people in apartments, we're not in other rooms. We're just, you know.
Now, could you put Kool-Aid in it and make Kool-Aid ice cubes?
You know, I bet you could.
You could put other stuff.
You know, I bet you, you know, we can try it.
Would you? I bet Chad will do that on the Gizwiz TV show.
I bet he will.
Gizwiz.tv. Ask Chad, you know, what flavor he'd like to make his ice cubes.
Perfect.
I actually think that's a good idea. You know what? Iced coffee. If you made coffee and you put that in there and you let it freeze ice cubes, there's some uses for this.
Yeah. And also it cools drinks quicker because of the hole in the middle. There's a lot of ice surface when you drop it into a drink.
Right. Well, find out more if you go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. And right there on the front page, there's a big button with my face on it. It says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy. You click that, and you'll find all the information that you need about this countertop ice cube maker from Rosewheel. You can also go there and click the button that says, "What the heck is it?" Stand back when you do that, though, because sometimes there's a hidden surprise. No, it's not. If you go there, you'll go to the website for the "What the heck is it?" game, a chance to look at a close-up picture of a gadget or a gizmo, and if you can identify it correctly, you're in the running for 12 autographed copies of magazine. Get it wrong, you're in the running for 24 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. Typical Dick DiBartolo math. And there's only a few days left, right? This ends on August 31st.
This ends on the 31st, next Friday.
So is it that's next Friday?
It's this coming Friday.
Okay, well, hurry up.
Exactly.
Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, take care. I'll see you next week.
All right. Last call of the day is from Murrieta, California. Al's on the line. Thanks for your patience, Al. Leo Laporte.
Oh, thank you very much, Leo. Yeah, my wife and I have been going to some thrift stores, and we found this iMac T4. And it looks really neat.
Holy cow. It's the cheese. We call them the cheese grater. It's got the holes on it.
Yeah, that's the one. It looks pretty neat, different looking.
They're great.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do is it's got old information on it from the last guy that had it. And I was thinking if I could get all that information off and maybe put a new OS on there, maybe like Leopard or something. Because I don't have the disk for anything older than Leopard. Is that possible?
The trick is that this one's about 15 years old. So Apple, you certainly won't be able to get the latest operating system on there, a Sierra. But probably Leopard or Snow Leopard is the last one you can get on there. And the reason is it just, you know, especially a G4, that's the old Powers PC platform. It's just not going to support the newer stuff. And that's the real limitation of all this. Is that
is there a way to put it on?
No.
The old Leopard maybe or something?
Well, Leopard, I bet you, well, I don't know. I mean, are you really? So let me go to everymac.com. This is a really good site for people who. How much did they want for this?
Oh, I already bought it. It's like $20.
That's a good price. It's about what it's worth.
Yeah.
So if you go to everymac.com, you can find the Mac, and it will tell you there what You can even look it up by serial number, which is what I would recommend, what the latest operating system is on there. But I have to be honest, not a lot of software is going to run because that comes, the G4 comes from the days, you know, when they weren't an Intel company. And so most of the software expects an Intel chip in there. That's a PowerPC chip. It's that old. But a great thing to play with. Might be able to put Linux on it. Thanks for the call. Thanks to all of you for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.